Let's turn now in our Bibles to Jeremiah chapter 1 as we continue our journey through the Scriptures. Jeremiah chapter 1. The words of Jeremiah, the son of Hilkiah, of the priests that were at Anathoth in the land of Benjamin. Anathoth was about an hour and a half north of Jerusalem. It was one of the priestly cities. The priests were not given inheritance in the land. The Lord was their inheritance, but they did have certain cities. Anathoth was one of the priestly cities. Hilkiah was the high priest at the time that Josiah was king over Judah. And there is reason to believe that this Hilkiah, the father of Jeremiah, was indeed the high priest at that time. And so it would mean that he came from a family of a notable spiritual influence in Israel. His uncle was Shalom, and Huldah, the prophetess, was the wife of Shalom. And thus, his aunt, Huldah, was the prophetess that they consulted when they found the words of the law. To whom the word of the Lord came in the days of Josiah, the son of Ammon, the king of Judah, in the 13th year of his reign. Now, Josiah came to the throne of Israel after the reign of Ammon. We were in Isaiah, and Isaiah prophesied during the reign of Hezekiah. Jeremiah is about 60 years after Hezekiah's time. When Hezekiah died, his son Manasseh took the throne. Manasseh was an extremely wicked king. He just killed the prophets of God. According to tradition, he had Isaiah the prophet sawed in two. In the book of Hebrews, it talks about how these men of God, of whom the world was not worthy, how they were killed and sawn asunder, or sawn in two. And it is thought that that is a reference to Isaiah at the hands of cruel Manasseh. Manasseh was totally evil. He led the nation in a downward plunge from which it never fully recovered. At the death of Manasseh, his son Amnon took the throne and ruled only for 2 years. At his death, Josiah came to the throne, but Josiah was only 8 years old when he became king in Judah. When he was 16 years old, he began a spiritual reformation. And during this time of spiritual reformation, they began to rebuild the temple, which had become wasted because of disuse. It had become a trash heap, and it had deteriorated, and thus they went in and began to remodel and refurbish the temple. In the 13th year of the reign of Josiah is when Jeremiah began his prophecy and his prophesying to the nation. It came also in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, the king of Judah, and unto the end of the 11th year of Zedekiah. So these are the final days of Judah before going into captivity. The reign of Josiah, at his death, Jehoahaz took the throne. Jeremiah doesn't mention Jehoahaz, probably because he only reigned for 3 months before he was assassinated. And then When Jehoahaz was assassinated, Jehoiakim came to the throne. Jehoiakim ruled for 11 years, and his reign was followed by Jehoiachin. But he doesn't, Jeremiah doesn't recognize him either. He was 8 years old when he started to reign, and he only reigned for 3 months. And so he was wiped out. And so it was a time of real civil turmoil and unrest. And thus those two short reigns are not recognized of Jehoiahaz and Jehoiachin. But the longer reigns were acknowledged here. And Zedekiah reigned for 11 years before he was carried away as a captive to Babylon. So Jeremiah lived during this whole period of fall of Judah to Babylon. He lived through the sieges. He lived through the captivities, the destruction of Jerusalem, and the destruction of the temple. And he was called of God to prophesy in these days of a great spiritual declension, days in which the nation had turned from God and had taken a course from which it did not alter, that was doomed to bring it to destruction, and ultimately did bring the nation to destruction. It is sad to see a nation die. And because this was the lot of Jeremiah, the interesting thing is that God was still speaking, though they had irrevocably turned against God and had taken the course that was destined to destroy them. God continued to speak. God just doesn't give up. And he continues to speak even after a person has taken a direction and course of life that is going to ensure that person's destruction. The Lord continues to speak. And thus was the case with Jeremiah. The marvelous thing is that God was still speaking to these people, still calling them to repent, still calling them to turn to God, though they did not, and it ultimately brought their ruin. They had false prophets, and it must be noted that the false prophets were encouraging them in their practices. The false prophets were saying that Jeremiah was a liar, that he was not prophesying of God, and that surely they were going to triumph over their foes. They were going to drive out the Babylonians. And these false prophets, the voices of the false prophets prevailed in Israel, and tragically, Israel was destroyed. So he prophesied to the end of the 11th year of Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, the king of Judah, under the carrying away of Jerusalem captive in the fifth month. That would be the month of August. It's in the spiritual calendar of Israel, which began in April. So then the word of the Lord came to me, saying, so this is a recounting of the beginning of this experience of Jeremiah in hearing the word of the Lord. All through the book of Jeremiah, you're going to find this phrase repeated. The word of the Lord came to Jeremiah the prophet, saying. And as we read over and over how the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah the prophet, it is interesting, and my mind is curious, just how did the Lord speak to Jeremiah? The phrase, the word of the Lord came to me, saying. And was it an audible voice? Was it a still small inner voice? Jeremiah speaks with such confidence that the word of the Lord came to me, saying. You wonder just how did the Lord speak to Jeremiah? Today, people oftentimes use that terminology. Well, the Lord spoke to me the other day, and the Lord showed me, and we use terms like that. Rarely does a person refer to having heard an audible voice. I do believe that the Lord speaks to me and has spoken to me, but I must confess I have never heard an audible voice. Now, if a person declares that they have heard an audible voice of God speaking to them, I do not doubt that. I believe that God can speak to people audibly. I'm only making mention of the fact that he has never spoken to me audibly. On a few occasions, God has spoken to me in such a powerful way, it was almost audible. It was just such a way in which he spoke to me, it was as though it were an audible voice, but I've never really heard an audible voice of the Lord. With Jeremiah, it would appear that it was not an audible voice. We find the case where the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah saying, "By the field of your uncle, for it is coming up for redemption, and the right of redemption is yours." Now, this happened when the Babylonians were besieging the city of Jerusalem. And at that time, Jeremiah was in the dungeon for his prophecies. The next day, his cousin Hanamiel came to him and said, "My father has sent me to ask you to redeem his field, for the right of redemption is yours." And Jeremiah said, "Then I knew it was the word of the Lord that came to me saying, 'By the field.'" In other words, he had the impression, evidently, I ought to go ahead and redeem the field that belongs to my uncle. And when the cousin came and said, "My father sent me to ask you to redeem the field," then it was confirmation to his heart that it was really the Lord speaking to him. We'll talk more about that when we get to that portion of Jeremiah's prophecy. So the word of the Lord came to me saying, "Before I formed you in the belly, I knew thee." So it goes back even before conception. In the foreknowledge of God, he knew Jeremiah. In God's foreknowledge, he knew you. The book of Revelation speaks of those whose names were written in the book of life from the foundation of the world. God is omniscient. He dwells in a dimension that is so far above and beyond our dimension that it's impossible for us to comprehend him. And God, who dwells in the eternal, can speak of things as existing, though they do not as yet exist, because he knows they are going to exist. And so much of the Bible is prophecy written in advance, as God spoke of things that were not yet. They had not yet been fulfilled within the time continuum, though as far as God's eternal plan, they were already accomplished facts. So God's knowledge and calling of Jeremiah began even before he was conceived. "Before you were formed, I knew you. And before you came out of the womb, I sanctified thee and ordained thee a prophet to the nations." Now you remember when John the Baptist was being carried in his mother Elizabeth's womb. And Mary, who at that time was pregnant with Jesus, came to visit her cousin Elizabeth. As she greeted Elizabeth, Elizabeth said, "What is it that the mother of my Lord should come to visit me? For the moment you spoke, the babe leaped within my womb." Now, John was ordained by God to be the forerunner of Christ before he was ever born, before he was ever conceived. Elizabeth was an old woman. The Bible says, well stricken in 2 years. That means she was so old she was bent over, as older people sometimes are bent over. She was bent over with years. Zacharias was an old man. And as he was there performing the functions of the priest, and it was his lot at that time to offer the incense before the altar of incense. As he was there, the angel Gabriel appeared unto him and told him, "Fear not, I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God." And he said, "Your wife Elizabeth is going to conceive and bear a son, and thou shalt call his name John. And he shall go before the Lord to turn the hearts of the children unto their fathers." And so the announcement of John as the forerunner of Christ, the fulfillment of the promise that before the Messiah, that God would send Elijah to prepare the hearts of the people. And so the father Zachariah questioned and doubted, because of Elizabeth's age, how that could ever be. He sought a sign, and he said, "All right, I'll give you a sign. You'll not be able to speak until the day the child is born." And so Elizabeth conceived. The child was destined, even before conception, to be the forerunner of the Messiah. God has a plan and a purpose for each of our lives. We're not here by happenstance. You have been created by God for a special purpose, for a special mission. You remember when the Jews were being threatened with extermination because of the wicked desires of Haman, the Persian, to destroy the Jews. And how that the king Ahasuerus had signed the decree. And Mordecai was urging Esther to go in and to get the decree rescinded or amended. And she was objecting because of the protocol of the Persian court. You just didn't go in unless you were called. And Mordecai said to her, "How do you know but what God has not brought you to the kingdom for such an hour as this?" That the whole plan of God, through all of the previous background, all of the things that have happened, your choice to be brought before the king, his choice of you as his wife to replace Vashti, Vashti's rebellion against her husband, her dismissal, the whole, how do you know but what God's hand isn't in all of this to bring you to just this point, this time, this hour? And the exciting thing about committing your life to the Lord is that God will bring about circumstances in order that he might fulfill his plan in your life and through your life. And every day is an exciting day, because you don't know but what God maybe hasn't had all of the background and past preparing you for just such a time as this. Who knows what God has in store for the future? The Lord seems to be opening up some extremely exciting doors for us. Opportunities that just stagger and boggle my mind. And as I just, you know, as the Lord opens doors, you sort of have to go through them. The Lord said, I've set before you an open door. If he sets before you an open door, you can't just say, well, I wonder. You have to go until he shuts the door. And so I'm moving until the Lord shuts the door. Moving towards this door that seems to be open. I've been invited by one of the highest officials in the Chinese government to come to China to talk to them in the seminaries there about evangelical Christianity in America, to speak to the largest three-self movement church in Beijing about Christian evangelical Christianity. And they've got me all scheduled for these meetings in the seminaries and with these different leaders in China. And it's mind-boggling. Now, the door seems to be open now. Who knows what the Lord may do, but, you know, we're responding and seeing what God may want to do. Who knows? What the future holds. It's exciting because you know that God is in control and that maybe all of the background up to this point is just preparing for this future that God has. Before God said, I formed you, I knew you. Before you were born, before you came out of the womb, I had set you apart and I had ordained you to be a prophet to the nations. Now, though his primary prophecy was to Judah, he did also prophesy to the nations. And as we get into the book of Jeremiah, we will find him prophesying against Babylon, prophesying concerning Edom and other nations. And so God called him as a prophet to the nations. His response was, Lord God, behold, I cannot speak, for I am a child. The word child is usually a reference to a teenager, and thus it is thought that he was probably still in his teens at the time that the Lord spoke to him. The word of the Lord came to him and told him that he was going to use him as a prophet to the nations. And so you can understand his reticence. It wasn't, though, an unwillingness. It wasn't, I will not, I cannot speak, for I am a child. And so to this objection, the Lord declared, do not say that I am a child, for you shall go to all that I shall send thee, and whatsoever I command thee, thou shalt speak. I cannot speak. I don't want you to speak. I want you to just say whatever I command you. Lord, I'm not eloquent. I don't want you to be eloquent. All I want you to do is speak my word. And that's all God wants you is for you to share his word. You don't have to be eloquent. Just the word that he gives to you, the word that he places in your mouth, that's what you're to share with others. So don't be afraid of their faces. For I am with you to deliver you, saith the Lord. So, commissioned to go, to speak the word of the Lord, commissioned not to fear, for the presence of the Lord would be with him. Then the Lord put forth his hand, and he touched my mouth. And the Lord said unto me, Behold, I have put my words in your mouth. See, I have this day set thee over the nations, over the kingdoms, to root out, to pull down, and to destroy, and to throw down, to build and to plant. There are times when a nation has become so corrupt, so far gone that there can be no rebuilding until it is, first of all, leveled. There, in some of these earthquakes, when a house has been shaken off of its foundation, there's no rebar in the bricks. The house is too far gone to try and put it back on the foundation and rebuild it. What you have to do is just, first of all, tear the thing down completely before you can start rebuilding, and you have to rebuild from the bottom up. Such was the case with the nation of Judah. And so his prophetic ministry was, first of all, tearing down that which was left, pulling it up by the roots, rooting it out. And then after it had been torn down and rooted out, then began the planting and the building. And so things are going to get a lot worse, basically, before they get better. You're to pull down, you're to root out, you're to destroy, and then you are to build and to plant. I really feel that the world and our nation has come to that point in history that Judah was, where it is too far gone to just try and rebuild. I think that government and all is just too far down the tubes. I don't think that it is salvageable at this point. I think that we're at that point of just being leveled. And then I believe the Lord is going to begin his building and his planting of the glorious kingdom. I think that we really have come to that stage of history where man has gone too far down the path that leads to destruction, and that there is really no turning back at this point. The word of the Lord came to me then, saying, Jeremiah, what do you see? Now, he's going to have a vision at this point, and he's asking Jeremiah, what do you see? And he said, I see the rod of an almond tree. And then the Lord said unto me, You have seen well, for I will hasten my word to perform it. Now, you really need the Hebrew language to grasp this completely. The word almond in the Hebrew is awake. And the reason why the word almond is awake in Hebrew is that the almond tree is the first tree that begins to blossom after losing the leaves and all in the winter. The almond tree begins in Israel to blossom in the end of January. The 1st of February is when the almond trees begin to blossom. And so it is the first of the trees to awake from winter. And so literally the Lord said, "What do you see?" And he said, "I see the rod of an awake tree." And the Lord responded, "You see well, for I will," and the word hasten there is the word awake in Hebrew, "I will awake my word to perform it." Or, "I see the rod of a watch tree," and God said, "I will watch over my word to perform it." So the promise that God is going to watch over his word. He's going to perform his word. So he said to me the second time, "What do you see?" And he said, "I see a boiling pot, and the face of it is towards the north." Then the Lord said unto me, "Out of the north shall evil break forth upon the inhabitants of the land. For lo, I will call all the families of the kingdoms of the north, saith the Lord, and they shall come, and they shall set every one his throne in the entering of the gates of Jerusalem, and against all of the walls thereof round about, and against the cities of Judah. And I will utter my judgments against them, touching all their wickedness, who have forsaken me, and have burned the incense to the other gods, and worshipped the works of their own hands." So what do you see? I see this boiling pot in the north, but it's tipping towards the south. And God said, so out of the north there's going to come this flood of armies who are going to destroy. And of course it's a reference to Babylon, who though is east, yet is also, when coming into the land of Israel, came through Syria, down through the northern part of the land, Dan, and then on down to Jerusalem. So coming from the north and bringing destruction in her wake and conquering over Jerusalem. Now God says that he will fulfill his judgments against Judah for their wickedness, because they have forsaken God and have burned incense to other gods and worshipped the works of their own hands. Forsaken God and worshipped other gods. Many times when a lady comes to me and says, "Chuck, I want you to pray for me. My husband said he doesn't love me anymore. He's moving out. He just doesn't want to live with me anymore." I will say to them, "Who is he interested in?" "Oh, I don't think he has any other girl." I said, "No, I'm sorry to tell you this, but I've never seen a man move out unless he's moving in." You know, there's another interest. And, "Oh, no, I don't think so. No, no." And I said, "Well, that's been my experience." And usually within a month or so, they'll say, "Oh, you know, I'm shocked he did move in." And well, yeah, I figured that, you know. A person generally doesn't move into a void. When you leave the worship of God, you've got to worship something. You don't just live in a vacuum. You don't live in a void. There is something that has replaced God in your life. There's another interest. There's another desire. There's something else that has replaced God in your life. Another God. Now, here in Judah, it was Baal It was Ashtoreth. It was Mammon. It was Molech. These were the gods that they had turned to. Ashtoreth is the worship of sex, or sex became their god. Their lust of the flesh, desires for sex, became the masters of their life. They were mastered by their sex drives, which were inflamed through pornography. And they turned away from God because God had prohibited sex except within the family unit between husband and wife. And they felt that that was too restrictive. And so they rebelled against God and the commandments of God, and they began to worship Ashtoreth. Mammon was the god of pleasure. And they began to live for pleasure, forsaking God and the worshiping of God, and just living for pleasure. The pleasure that could be derived from drugs or from certain activities, or power, the god Mammon. Molech, the god of pleasure, Mammon, the god of power. And they started living for possessions, building fancy houses and things of this nature, and they became absorbed in their possessions, and they worshiped the works of their own hands. Therefore, gird up your loins. The call of God to Jeremiah. Now, girding up your loins, we've mentioned this before. The fellows wore skirts. Long skirts are hard to work in or hard to run in. So whenever you were going to go to work, you would lift up your skirt, tie it high with a sash so that you had a short skirt. And that way you could work. And so the girding up of your loins is always the tying up of your skirt with the sash to make it shorter so you could go to work or so you could run. So gird up your loins, arise and speak to them all that I command thee. Be not dismayed of their faces. Now again, the Lord is telling him that back in the beginning, the Lord said, don't be afraid of their faces. They're going to be looking in anger at you. They're not going to like what you're saying. You're going to see their faces contorted with anger as you prophesy to them. But don't let that turn you from my word. Don't modify what I'm saying. Don't try to appease them. And if you are intimidated by the faces that they're making at you, then I'll just let you be confounded before them. For behold, I have made thee this day a defense city. The Lord is saying, I will be your defense, Jeremiah. I will be the one who protects you. I will watch over you. And you will be as a defensed city and an iron pillar, brass walls against the whole land. You're going to stand almost alone in this, Jeremiah. But I will give you the strength. I will protect you. You're going to stand against the whole land, against the kings of Judah, against the princes, and against the priests. And against the people of the land. The land was corrupted. Priesthood was corrupted. There were false prophets. And Jeremiah, you're going to be like a lone voice in the wilderness. You're going to be standing up against even the religious people and the religious leaders. And they shall fight against you. Not going to be easy. I like it that the Lord doesn't draw us through false kind of pretexts. The Lord doesn't say, oh, if you'll just yield to my way, it'll be so beautiful and so wonderful. You'll find just such ease and, oh, things will be so smooth. The Lord is saying, Jeremiah, it's going to be tough, man. They're going to fight against you. They're going to contort their faces, and it's going to be tough, but I'm going to be with you. You will be as a defense city. I will watch over you. I will take care of you. They will fight against you, but they will not prevail. You're going to prevail, Jeremiah. They'll fight against you. And as we go through the prophet, and of course we get the history of his prophecy also, and you'll find out that they are going to be fighting against him. Just really fighting against him. The other prophets are going to be fighting against him. The priests are going to, he's going to be doing some things that are going to anger people. During the reign of Josiah, there comes this spiritual reformation. The king ordered it. He ordered the temple to be rebuilt. He ordered all of the idols to be cast down and to be destroyed. The places of the worship of these other gods, he ordered them eradicated. And because Josiah was a good king and a popular king, the people went along with him and they started going back to church. They started going back to the temple, and once again the temple was filled on Sabbath day. Oh, great move of God, revival. No, it's only surface. It hasn't gotten down into the real heart and life of the people. So because it is a sort of a false kind of a revival in that it is only surface and not really touching their hearts, the Lord said to Jeremiah, go down to the house of the Lord, and as the people are going in, cry out to them and say, don't trust in lying vanity, saying, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord are these. Hear people going to temple and he's out there shouting. You're trusting in a lying vanity. And that would upset the priest. You know, the guy out there calling to the people that are coming to worship, you know. And so it's going to be tough. They're going to fight against you, but they will not prevail against thee, for I am with thee, saith the Lord, to deliver thee. It's going to be hard. They'll fight against you, but they'll not prevail. Why? Because the Lord is with you. We really don't have time, it's early I know, but we don't have time to move into the second chapter because there is much in this second chapter that I want to deal with, and it would take us, if I tried to do the second chapter, it would take us too late. So I have the dilemma, do I quit early or do I go into the next one and then have everybody wearied because I've gone over time? There is a proverb that says, withdraw thy foot speedily from thy neighbor's door, lest he weary with thine off-coming. So I'll opt for the earlier one, and rather that you go away hungry than go away burping because you've been so stuffed. And so it'll give you the second chapter to study over for our next session together. We'll go chapters 2 and 3. Shall we stand? Even as the Lord promised to Jeremiah that he would watch over his word to fulfill it. So may the Lord watch over your life to fulfill in your life His purposes and His plans. And I pray that by and through the Spirit of God, you will come to an understanding of what God has set you apart for and what God has ordained for you. That work that God has ordained that you should fulfill while you are here on this earth. That work for His kingdom and His glory. And so may your heart be open that the word of the Lord might come to you to guide and to direct you in that place of service where you might find the will and the purpose of God being fulfilled in your life. The Lord be with you. The Lord bless and keep you in Jesus' name.